Morning. We find ourselves in the seventh parak of Chulin. We are today's daf is Sadi Beis. We are in Sadi Aleph Amud Beis. We're starting today about a third of the way down. First word in the line is Hashem Hashem, and then Ksiv. We're going to be quoting Psukim. Psukim regarding Yaakov and a number of Psukim today that we're darshaning. Some of them are going to sound extraordinarily familiar to you. It's going to resonate with you as a lot of them are Rashi's brought down on Chumash. Yesterday's daf, we went through a lot of the episode regarding the wrestling match between Yaakov and the Malach. The Gemara uses a lot of the wrestling maneuvers in terms of helping us identify the Gittanasha. Which gate is it? Is it the right? Is it the left? Is it maybe both? Various. It's machlokas amongst the Tanayim. The Shitas are the Mishnah, going back to the beginning of the Perek of Pei Tesem and Beis. So the Mishnah told us that's the right and the left. The Rebbe Yehuda, whose Shita is not brought down in the Mishnah, said that it's the right. The Gemara had a bit of a discussion whether Rav Yehuda thought it was the right or he knew it was the right. Gemara's conclusion is that for the Rav Yehuda was for sure the right sciatic nerve to the exclusion of the left. How did they arrive at that position? So in yesterday's Gemara, the Gemara actually tried to give analysis to the wrestling bit that took place between the Malach and Yaakov, and based on the various wrestling maneuvers, so that established whether it was the right or the left, as I mentioned yesterday. Gittanasha is a really interesting isser in that it is episodic in nature. The Torah is not just simply giving us the mitzvah and saying to fulfill the mitzvah, or in this case, to fulfill the law in the Torah, but rather it is really based, it's predicated on an actual episode that it plays, that occurs in the Torah. Mitzrayim, I guess, would fall a little bit under this category of mitzvahs that are episodic in nature. It's based on an episode, but nothing more than Gittanasha. I think Gittanasha, in this category that I just made up category. So in this category of episodic mitzvos, I think it's number one on the list. The reason why I put it number one is not only is the entire Isser developed on an episode, but on top of that, it's not even brought in the places where you normally find mitzvos. It's not Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Devarim. It's found in Sefer Bereishis, and that's the only place that it's located. So it's a really interesting mitzvah in of itself. The various psukim that describe the wrestling between Yaakov and the Malach. So we discussed a little bit yesterday. Why did Yaakov go back? Why was Yaakov found by himself? So that we covered yesterday. And now let's continue. We'll pick it up right where we left off. And the Gemara quotes the following: "V'ksiv v'yikach me'avnei hamakom," and he takes from the Avnei Hamakom. Now this, of course, is going back earlier. This is the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. But we were here just a moment earlier, if you remember, because we talked about the sun setting. Sunset prematurely for Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov was in Beit El. Now again, if you're confused, Beit El, Yerushalayim, good. I mentioned that it's fair to be confused by that. Rashi over here addressed it a little bit. The Ramban and Chumash. Rashi and Chumash and the Ramban and Chumash addressed it at much greater length. But anyway, the Vayikach me'avnei hamakom, he takes from the stones of the place. This one I think we're all familiar with. Uksiv vayikach es ha'even. So the pasuk is a little bit confusing. Stones, stone, lashon rabim, lashon yachid. What happened? Amar Rebbe Yitzchak. Amalamishin is kapsik olosin avadim lamakom echad. What he did is he gathered all the stones into one place. V'chol achas v'achas omeris. Alayan ech tzadik. So, I'm sorry, alayan ech tzadik zeh rosho. So, and each one is having an argument, a fight in terms of which one is going to be the support for the tzaddik's head, for Yaakov's head. And so this medrash made famous by Rashi. Rashi and Chumash brings it down. Tana v'kulan nivlu'u be'echad. The Brisa then goes on to describe how they all absorbed one into another and they became one unified stone. V'yichalom yinei sulam utzav artsa. Pasuk continues where Yaakov now is having a dream and there's a ladder. Tana kama rachvo shel sulam, the Brisa over here describes the width of the ladder. So we're not talking about the height of the ladder, but the width of the ladder, shmona alafim parsa. So its width is 8,000 parsa. It's a lot. The one parsa is equivalent to 4 mil. So we have 8,000 of them. That's a lot. Dichsli v'nei malachi elokim olim v'yardim bo. So now the reason why it needs to be this wide is because we have malachim going up and down on the ladder. Olim shnayim v'yardim shnayim. So v'chipagu b'hadi adadi havlu arba. So we know the traffic on the ladder. Traffic on the ladder, right? Now I give official traffic report on the ladder. So there are malachim going up and malachim coming down. Malachim is two, right? We always take the most conservative Lashon Rabban that we can. So two is the Lashon Rabbim, and that's right, tafasta, meruba, lo tafasta, we can't do more than two. So two going up and two coming down. So if two going up and two going to, coming down, uksiv bei b'malach, I'm sorry, so at one point in time, they're going to intersect. Uksiv bei b'malach v'givisi k'tarshish v'gemir, I'm sorry, v'givisi k'tarshish, and as far as the width of an angel, so it is that of Tarshish u'gemir, and we have a tradition, the Tarshish treyafei parsi havu, that Tarshish was 2,000 amas at one point in its dimensions. So, sorry, Trey Alfe Parse Have, 2,000 Parsa was the width of Tarshish. That makes a lot more sense. Thank you. And so now 2,000 multiplied by 4, and that's how we got to the 8,000 Parsa, which is the width of the ladder. Now, obviously, over here, the dimensions that are given are appropriate and specific towards Agadita, meaning not Halacha. And so, obviously, over here, the Gemara is trying to communicate ideas to us. And again, I'm not the right person to be able to communicate these ideas. I can read and translate the Gemara. That's what I'm good for. Tana olam ha-mesaklam b'diyukah shamala v'yardim ha-mesaklam b'diyukah shamata. And the Gemara quotes another brisa where they go up and they look and they see the image of Yaakov engraved on the Kisei HaKavod. And they go down and they see Yaakov and it's the same picture. Now, the idea over here, I think, I mean, I've heard this numerous times, so it's not an original thought, is that the picture that was on the Kisei HaKavod was the potential of what Yaakov could be. And when they come down, they see Yaakov and they see, oh my gosh, he actually got to his potential. He actualized his potential. So, Bala Sikune, and they wanted to harm Yaakov, jealousy. And they wanted to harm Yaakov. Now, the jealousy, by the way, is not a guess on my part. Rashi says, machmas kina. They were actually... That's a fair question. I'm just not the right person to ask. Bala Sikune, so they wanted to harm him. Yad bihine Hashem nisav alav. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu standing right over there to protect him. Amar Rishim HaMalaki Shemalai Mikra Kasov Yev Shala Omro. Now, had it not been for the Pasuk, we would not be able to say this. Kadam Shemenifa Bano. It's like a father fanning over his son, right? Like warding off the flies and those things that are looking to harm his son. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was regarding the Malachim, so the Malachim would not harm him. Ha'arta She'arta Shochev Aleha, my Rebuse. The land which Yaakov is currently situated over. Now, Yaakov is standing on how much land? Not a lot, whatever his feet are feeling right now. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak Malami Shekafla HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'chol Eretz Yisrael V'inichu Tachas Yaakov Avinu. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu did is he folded the entire Eretz Yisrael and he placed it under Yaakov. Shetei Nochel Lichavish Levanov. So that it would be easier for his son to conquer. When I say son, I really mean his children. The children of Yaakov to conquer. Okay, we have a concept that comes up. Masa Avosim Labanim. I'm sure you've heard it before. That that which happened with our patriarchs are going to be Sim Levanim. They are going to be forecasting what's going to be happening for his children. And this was made famous by the Ramban. The Ramban makes this comment numerous times on his Parash on Chumash. Now, the Ramban, of course, lived in the 13th century, well after the writing of the Gemara. You will not see this expression, myself, Asim al-Abanim, in the Gemara. This expression was coined by the Ramban. But there are a number of Gemaras that speak to this idea. The Gemara that we just read together is a perfect illustration of this idea. Meaning, what is it? What's this business of HaKadosh Baruch Hu folding Eretz Yisrael and placing it under Yaakov so that what? So that his children can conquer Eretz Yisrael? So again, it speaks to this idea of Masa Avosim Labanim. Vayomer Shalcheini Ke'Allah HaShachar, continuing in the Gemara. So he says, send me, because it's time, it's dawn. And this is what the Malach says to Yaakov at the end of the fight. Amar lo ganavato kavyusas ata. Now Yaakov says, I understand, day and you got to go? Like, we just got started. Yaakov was ready for a fight. So what are you? Are you a thief? Are you a kidnapper? By the way, Tosfos does not like the explanation of Kav Yusas being a kidnapper. See the second class Tosfos who discusses that point. Shemisyar min ashachar, meaning it's dawn and now you got to go. Omer lo malach ani. Omiyam shenivesa lo yigiz man lo mashira ad achshav. And so the malach says to Yaakov, you know, I'm really a malach. And it is now time to say shira. I have not said shira up until this point in my life. In my existence, I should say, and now it's time for me to say Shira. Misayel Rav Chananu Amarav, Damarav Chananu Amarav, and now the Gemara is going to launch into a discussion about Malachim and Shira. Okay, this is as esoteric as it could come. So Amarav Shosh Kisa Shal Malach Esharis Omer Shira. There are three groups of Malachim who say Shira. Bechol Yom Achas Omer Es Kadosh, Achas Omer Es Kadosh, Achas Omer Es Kadosh, Hashem Tzvakos. So in one version, what we have is one staying Kadosh, the second one staying Kadosh, and the third one staying Kadosh Hashem Tzvakos. Now this idea sounds familiar, right? It's Kedusha. But Kedusha, of course, is really based on Psukim. This is Psukim in Yeshayahu in the sixth parak of Yeshayahu. Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos. And if you look in the Psukim in context, you will see that the Pasuk is describing the Malachim saying Shira. The way the Gemara is presenting it right now, it's three groups of Malachim, each one given a word, each one saying Kadosh. And the third group saying Kadosh Hashem Tzvakos. And the Pasuk is the way it's presented to us. It's basically, it's taking all their shiras and putting it together. Meisvei, the Gemara challenges, Chavim Yisrael Fnei Kadosh Baruch Hu Yosem, in Malach HaShar, She Yisrael Amim, Shir B'Chosham, Malach HaShir, San Amim Shir, El HaPam Achaz B'Yom. V'Arm El HaPam Achaz B'Shabbos, V'Arm El HaPam Achaz B'Chodesh, V'Arm El HaPam Achaz B'Shana, V'Arm El HaPam Achaz B'Shavu, V'Arm El HaPam Achaz B'Yova, V'Arm El HaPam Achaz B'Olam. In a number of different ways, we're going to be contrasting our ability to say Shira versus the Malachim's ability to say Shira. Point number one, when do we say Shira? So we say Shira every single day. Now, in of itself, what does that mean? We say Shira every single day. Perhaps it's talking about Pesukah de Zimra. Perhaps, right? Not clear from the Gemara exactly what our Shira is that we say on a daily basis. But the Gemara assumes that, or maybe the Gemara just simply means that we have the ability to say Shira every single day. Okay. Meanwhile, as far as the Malachim are concerned, their ability to say Shira is only... Now, we have a number of different versions in terms of the infrequency that the Malachim have to say Shira. So it's once a day, once a week, once a month, once a year, once a Shemitah cycle, once a Yovel, or once in their existence. Whatever the infrequency is, point number one, we say Shira frequently, and they say it infrequently. Number two, Yisrael Maskirin Hashem Achar Shtei Tevos Shenemar. Now, when we say Shira, so we say it, we say Shem Hashem after but just two words of intro. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And by the way, that might have answered my first question, that the Shema is Shira. So the Umalach HaShar is Ein Mazkirin Es Hashem Ela La'achar Gimel Tevos. And as far as the Malachim are concerned, they only get to say Shem Hashem after three words. Kedichsiv, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos. Now already you see the question, meaning previously we had it described as the third group of Malachim saying Kadosh Hashem Tzvakos. And that can't be because we've just learned together that they can only say Shem Hashem after three words. All right. But anyway, let's finish the Braisa. The Ein, Malach HaShar Samim Shir Lamala Ad Shiyam Yisrael Lamata. And the third differentiation and what makes our ability to say Shira superior to that of the Malachim is that they can't start until we start. We say Shira, and then and only then can the Malachim say Shira. Shenemar baran yachak kochvei boker, v'hadar v'yiru kol b'nei Elokim. So first we, the kochvei boker, the morning star, right, in allusion to the Jewish people, so we say Shira together, and then and only then the b'nei Elokim, the Malachim, are saying Shira. So that's the end of the Braisa, so our ability to say Shira surpasses that of the Malachim. Now, with that stated, we are bothered because the second point that we just made in the Braisa is that we get to say Shem Hashem after two words, Shema Yisrael Hashem, and they say it only after three, Kadosh, 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 Hashem. So, Ala Achas Omer Kadosh, V'Achas Omer Kadosh, Kadosh, V'Achas Omer Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos. Okay, so over here the answer is actually a pretty straightforward answer, pretty simple answer. We're not going to change much from what we said previously. There are three groups of Malachim, and each one says Shira, but what each one is doing is adding a word Kadosh. The first one says Kadosh, the second group say Kadosh, Kadosh, and the third group say Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos. So we still have that structure of three Malachim, plus we conform to the rule that they can only say Shem Hashem after three words.
What about the second part?
The Ha'ika. Watch what happens next. V'ahika baruch Hashem mimkamo. So what happens now where, baruch kavod Hashem mimkamo, where they're saying Shem Hashem after two words. So the Gemara gives a couple of answers to that. Answer number one of the Gemara is we turn to the top of Sadi Beis Amon Aleph, Ofanim hu da amri lei. Oh, that's not the Malachim, that's the Ofanim. That clarified everything. Okay, the Ofanim are another group of Malachim. On what level do they exist? Above regular Malachim, below regular Malachim? Sounds like from our Gemara, it's above regular Malachim. It's another group. Right? We speak as with you know, I'm speaking on behalf of myself. With little understanding in terms of the groups of Malachim and the responsibility of the groups of the Malachim, but certainly we're familiar, meaning we daven and we ofanim, chayas HaKodesh, meaning there are various groups of Malachim. Malachim are also separated into different types of Malachim. So the ofanim are able to do this, Ibai Seymour, or the Gemara gives a more principled answer. Came into Yisrael v'shus Yisrael. The more principled answer goes like this. When they start off with the first time they're going to mention Shem Hashem, which is Kadosh, 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 so you need three words. Once they're given permission to say Shem Hashem, so now from that point going forward, so now they could say Shem Hashem even without the introductory three-word introduction. So, Kevin Diyahiv, or Shusa Is Yahiv, period. Okay. Pasuk in Hosea. Vayashar al-Malch vayuchal b'chav yitzchanen lo. The Pasuk in Hosea now gives a description, a postscript, if you will, to the fight between Yaakov and the Malach. Now, the Navi Hosea describes it as follows. Vayashar al-Malch vayuchal. I'm sorry. Vayasar al-Malch vayuchal. He fought with the angel, and he was victorious. A lot of pronouns over here. B'chav yitzchanen lo. He cried, and he pleaded with him. So, with all these pronouns, so who was the victor and who walked away crying? Now, I think we all know the answer. The Gemara is going to spell it out. Right? The pasuk says, Kisarisi malokim. Now we're going back to the psukim of the actual wrestling match. And it says, Kisarisi malokim. And now the next word is really the important one, Vatuchal. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yaakov, you fought with him and you won. So we know now that Yaakov was the victor. Now, Havi Yaakov Nasa Salamalach. Bachav Yitzchanen Lo, and Yodea Mi Bachalami. Now, the next part of the Pasuk in Hosea, of who walked away crying, or not walked away, but who was crying to whom? Kishu Omer, Vayamar Shachini, Havi Omer, Malach Bachal Yaakov. It was the angel who cried to Yaakov. So, Kisarisi Melachim Vayiman Hashem. Now, once again, we're back into the Pesukim in Parshas Vayishlach. So you wrestled Im Elokim V'im Anashim, together with Elokim and Anashim. Now, what does that mean? Hard to understand the Pesuk at its very superficial level, because Malach wrestled with one angel. So what does that mean, Im Elokim V'im Anashim? So Amar Rabba Remez Ramaz Lo Shasim Shnei Sarim Latzeis B'menu. So at this point in time, the Malach is telling Yaakov that there are going to be two leaders coming from you who are going to be leading concurrently. Rosh Golo Sheba Bavel V'Nasi Sheba Eretz Yisrael. The head of Bavel and the head of Eretz Yisrael. Now you notice that one is referred to as Rosh Golo Sheba Bavel and the other one is Nasi Sheba Yisrael. Now Rashi over here explains as follows. Sarisim Elokim. So which one is Bavel, which one is Eretz Yisrael? Meaning we have two terms in the Pasuk. We have Elokim and we have Anashim. Now probably over here I can even pronounce it as Elohim, because it's not a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a reference to judicial branch. And Rashi writes, Sarisayim Elohim, Nasisha Eretz Yisrael, Shesmuchim Hem, V'nikrem Elohim. The leaders of Eretz Yisrael have smicha, and they refer to as Elohim, meaning that is a term to describe the ability to judge. Ad Elohim Yavod Dvar Shneim, Rashi quotes the pasuk from Parshas Mishpatim, right, that what happens when there is litigation between people, so you go to Elohim. You go to Beis Din. You go to judge. V'im Anashim Rosh HaGola. And the Anashim is a reference to the Rosh HaGola. Okay. So, now in Galus there was also a court system, but they weren't smuchim. So, in other words, with the smicha, so now we have the formal designation of Elohim, which is, that's the reference of the B'nai Eretz Yisrael, and the Nisim of Eretz Yisrael. Masha'in Kain in Galus, so you had a judicial branch, but you didn't have smicha, and therefore it's not Elohim. And back to the Gemara, Mikan Remez Lo Galus. And this is now a Remez, the Malach is telling Yaakov, and that's Galus. And as I mentioned already previously, the entire episode of the wrestling between the Malach and Yaakov is all portending to the Galus. It is a forecast of the Galus. You see the Sefer Chinuch in describing the Gittin Asha and how it is an allusion to the Galus. And over here in our Gemara, it speaks it out very clearly. The dialogue that's taking place between the Malach and Yaakov is about the galus. It is really all about the galus. Uvegefen shloshet sarigim. Okay, everyone get ready. We know that Yosef was in prison together with two of the ministers of Paro, and one of them, so he was the official wine pourer of Paro. He was in charge of drinks, and drinks over there meant wine. And we all know the episode at the end of Parshas Vayeshev. So they have dreams. Yosef says to them, "Let me hear the dreams. I'll interpret the dreams for you." Good. We're all familiar. So what we're going to be doing now is as follows. The dreams that they have are, the Gemara's general understanding of dreams, forecast for the future. There's a partial nevuah that's encoded in dreams. Now, the truth of the matter is, even before we get to the Gemara, just in the Torah itself, we know that. Because what Yosef does when he hears the dreams is that he forecasts their future based on the dreams. So already we know from the Torah itself that dreams are forecasting the future. But the Gemara is going to understand that these dreams are more than just representative of what occurred to the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOfim. They also are going to be larger representations of the Jewish people. And so what the Gemara is going to be doing for a good amount of time is of today's daf is it's going to go through the sequence of these psukim, specifically the Sar HaMashkim, the three vines, the clusters of grapes, the budding, and the Gemara now is going to give numerous interpretations of this pasuk as it forecasts the future. And so I think the number is 8 in terms of the number of interpretations the Gemara is going to give, right? I try to keep a running count. Let's go. So on this Geffen, the Geffen is a description of the vine in total. So there were three branches. Amar b'chia bar'aba, amar rav, elu gimel sari ge'im, hayotim yisrael b'chol dor v'dor. So basically there are three leaders in every generation. Now the reason why the Gemara over here is related at this point in time, even though this has nothing to do with Yaakov, Gidonasha, wrestling with the angel, is because the first interpretation is fitting into what we just learned. We just learned that there's going to be a historical point in time where we already experienced it, now in retrospect, but there's going to be a historical point in time where there are going to be two central Jewish communities, one in Israel and one in Bavel. And in terms of the leadership of the two, so already we learned that the Malach told Yaakov at the wrestling match that there's going to be leaders in Eretz Yisrael, and there are going to be leaders in Bavel, leaders in Eretz Yisrael, Elokim, leaders in Bavel, Anashim. Now, in a similar vein, when Yosef is interpreting the dream of the Sar HaMashkim, so there are three branches, and now in our first interpretation, it's going to follow in suit. There are going to be three leaders. Two of them are going to be leading one community, and one's going to be leading the other. Which one gets two, which one gets one, we're going to see right now. Alternating. Sometimes two of them are going to be ruling Bavel and one Eretz Yisrael, and sometimes flipped. Now, at one point historically, it was clear that there were two leaders in Bavel. And who were they? They were the two grandchildren of Rav. Right, the Rav was their maternal grandfather. Right, Bnei Barte de Rav. The Rava Amar Elu. So that was pshat number one, and now the Gemara is going to launch into a series of other pshatim. Rava Amar Elu Shlosha Sari Goyim Shemalamdim Zchusa Yisrael B'chol Dor V'Dor. Rava says that these branches are three groups of Goyim that are melamed zchus on the Jewish people, who find favor for the Jewish people in every generation. Tanya Rabbi Elazar Amar Geffen Zeha Olam. So Geffen is a reference to the world. Shlosha Sarigim, the three branches of Avram, Yisrael, and Yaakov are three patriarchs. V'kaparechas al tanitza, and now the sprouting and the budding of the fruit, Ela ha'imahos. Those are our matriarchs. They bud and they sprout, meaning they produce the next generation. And as far as the cluster of grapes are concerned, so this is a reference to the Shvatim. Now, Rabbi Yoshua categorically objects to Rabbi Eliezer's pshat that he just offered. Because the way Rabbi Eliezer offers pshat in the pasuk, and what these items represent, So he says they are referencing to things that had happened historically in the past. And Rabbi Yehoshua said, why would the dream do that? The dream is not talking about what happened in the past. The dream is going for the future. And so therefore, now we don't know what Rabbi Eliezer's counter-argument is, if in fact he has one. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara goes over the pshat of Rabbi Yehoshua. Ela masha asilios, ela gefen zu Torah. So a gefen is a reference to the Torah. Shosha sarigim ela Moshe va'aron v'miriam. And the three branches is Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Mehika parachas altani tza. The sprouting, that's Elu Sanhedrin. And if shilash kalsa anavim, and then the actual grapes, the cluster of grapes, Elu atzadikim shebechold avador, that's a reference to the tzadikim. Amar Rav Nachman adayin tzrichim anu lamoda'i. A famous expression of the Gemara, which is Rav Nachman says, we need the Rav from Moda'i. The Rav from Moda'i is the one who's going to be telling us what he feels is the best shot of the Pasuk. Because what he does is that he doesn't scatter the pshat all over the place. But rather what he does is he keeps the representation to a central location. Rabbi Lazar Modei Omer Geffen Zushalayim. The Geffen is a reference to Yushalayim. Shosha Sarigim Zu Mikdash Melech V'Kohen Gadol. The three branches are the base of Mikdash, King and Kohen Gadol. V'Ika Parach Saltan Yisrael Pirchei Kohuna. The sprouting, the budding is the young Kohanim. And if Shilu Ashkalosa Navim Elu Nesachim. And as far as the grapes themselves are concerned, what place does the grapes have in the base of Mikdash? The correct answer is Nesachim. The wine that is poured down the Mizbeach. Rabbi Shuman Levi Mokim La B'Matanos. Rabbi Shuman Levi says that the pasuk over here is referencing the gifts that the Kadosh Baruch Hu gives to the Jewish people. Dam Rabbi Shuman Levi Geffen Zutorah. The Geffen is a reference to Torah. Shoshes Sargim Zer Be'er Amud Anan Uman. The three branches are the gifts that we got in the desert. The well, the clouds, the man that came down daily. V'hikup, 6 days a week. V'hikup parachas altanitza ilo abikurim. And the parachas altanitza, the sprouting, that's a reference to the bikurim. And ishilosh kosanavim el nesachim. And the grapes themselves, that's a reference to the nesachim. Interesting how the Gemara puts nesachim and bikurim under the category of gifts. Rav Yirmiya Ba'aba Amar Geffen Elu Yisrael. Another pshat of the Gemara is that a Geffen is a reference to Bnei Yisrael. V'chino Amar Geffen Mimitzrayim Tasiya. We were a Geffen leaving Egypt. Shosha Sarigim Elu Shosha Regalim Sheyisrael Olim B'chol Bayin B'chol Shana V'Shana. So and as far as the three branches of Yisrael, that's the three times of Aliyah L'Rego on an annual basis. V'chino Parachas Altani Tzah Higiyaz Man Sheyisrael Lefros V'Lerbos. And in terms of the budding and the sprouting, so that is a reference to our multiplication. V'cheinu Omer v'nei Yisrael paru v'yishrutzu. Al Tanitza higiyaz man sheyisrael li ga'el. And as far as Al Tanitza, it's time for us to sprout and to leave. So that's the time that we leave Eretz Mitzrayim. V'cheinu Omer v'yaz natzcham al begadai v'chol mabushai eg alti. Gemara quotes the pasuk from Yeshayahu describing our exodus from Egypt as being like a sprouting. Now, you'll look at the psukim, and when the Sar HaMashkim describes the cup, he uses the word kos three times. Why three? Lama echad. I skipped just a little bit. I'm sorry. I see it. And then and what about the actual grapes themselves? It's time for Mitzrayim to drink the bitter drink. The bitter drink, meaning that not only are we going to be leaving Egypt, but Mitzrayim is going to get makos, a lot of them, ten in total. V'hanu d'amar Rava, shoshakosos hamurts b'Mitzrayim. Now, let's go back and I'll say it again. Now, if you look in the psukim, the Sar HaMashkim, you'll note that it says the word kos three times. Lama, echer shoshasa b'mei Moshe. So one time, and the cup over here, meaning the kos hatar e'elah, the bitter cup. Mitzrayim is going to get it three times. Once, Echa Sheshasa B'mei Moshe, during the days of Moshe, meaning the Exodus. V'Echa Sheshasa B'mei Paru Nechol. This is now during the historical era of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar laid war against Mitzrayim and beat Mitzrayim. And the Paru at the time was known as Paru Nechol. Paru is just simply a generic name describing the leader of Egypt, Paru. So there's the Paru of the days of Moshe. And then hundreds of years later, there's Paru Nechal. V'echad sh'atidu l'shtos im kol ovdei kochavim. And then there's a third one for the Zman HaMashiach. There is a Everyone knows there's four cups on the Seder night. I felt that, yes, everybody knew. Why there are four cups? So there's no clear answer in the Gemara. The Gemara never discusses why there's four. So the answer that is generically given, which is a good answer, because it is the Rashbam brings it down in the beginning of the 10th parak of Pesachim, is that the Arba Lashana Shel Geula. Another approach, however, which is, in terms of its sourcing, it's Midrashim, but our Gemara kind of speaks to it. Our Gemara does not connect the dots. But there are three Kosos that are mentioned over here, the three Kosos Tarei La'ah. And then on top of that, of course, is the Kos Kiddush that you know that you have at the Seder night. So that brings us to four. Another possible approach.
What is the one that Sheshosem Bimei Moshe refers to?
That's Yetzias Mitzrayim.
So that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
The Kos HaTarei La'ah is what the Mitzrim are going to be drinking.
Oh, that's for the
Mitzrim. Amalei Rabbi Abba Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba Ki Darish Lehu Rav Lahani Krai Ba'agarata Kavasech Darish Lehu. And Rabbi Abba says to Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba, you know that when Rav Darshan, these psukim Darshan, just like the way you did. Amar Shema Melakish Umazu Ki Gefen Nimshala. This nation, meaning the Jewish people, are compared to a Gefen. How is that so? Zmur Shaba Elu Balabatim. So the actual vines themselves, that's the Balabatim. They're the ones who support. They give structure. Eshkol Shaba Elu Tamid Chachamim. The actual grapes themselves, the clusters of grapes, that's a reference to the Tamid Chachamim. Alam Shaba Elu Ameh Ha'aretz, the leaves, that's the Amaratzim. And Kenokonos Shaba. Now these are the various twigs, but the twigs that are not giving support to the vine, but just basically useless twigs. Elu Ekanim Shaba Yisrael, those are the sinners of the Jewish people. V'hanu D'shach Mitam, and that was a letter that we received from there, meaning from Eretz Yisrael. Libai Rachamim Itkalya Al-Alya. I need the clusters, meaning the Tamid Chachamim, to be davening on behalf of the leaves. The leaves, as we described, were just simply the Amaratzim. Meaning the Amaratzim are not educated and they simply don't have the wherewithal, the means in which to daven. So you, the clusters, meaning the Tamid Chachamim, so part of your responsibility is to daven on behalf of those who cannot daven. Similar idea, by the way, comes up at the end of Rosh Hashanah. Where on Rosh Hashanah, so there is, obviously, anyone who can daven is going to go to Shul and daven. And for the people who are out in the fields, the workers, the quote-unquote, the simple people, so we also have the responsibility to daven on their behalf as well.
It says that they
survived
because of the
Amara. Right, right. De Amalei Alya, that's coming up. De Amalei Alya, Lamit Kaima Itakla. Because you, the grapes, you need the leaves. The leaves are part and parcel of the vine. They are necessary for the vine. And so just like the entire structure needs the leaves, you need them as well. Interesting, by the way, as far as the Kenokonos are concerned, so it does not seem that we have the responsibility to daven on their behalf. That's what it seems. On other Gemaras, the Gemara in Tanis talks about how we need the Rishayim, the Poshim, to join us in terms of davening. So from our Gemara, it's not that perfectly clear in terms of our responsibility to the sinners. Okay. No, understood. Achra li b'chamisha asar kesef. Continuing now, we are Pasuk in Hosea. So we are going to be reading the Pesukim and again, darshaning. Excuse me. And again, what does this Agadah have to do with what we discussed previously? It again speaks to the idea that there were two concurrent communities that are going to happen. Well, now from our perspective, they already occurred. One in Eretz Yisrael and one in Bavel, and basically the twin Jewish community and the leadership of those two communities. So we already saw it by the Gid Anasha and the Malach. We already saw it by Yosef and the Star Mashkim. And now the Gemara is going to reflect on the same idea as it relates from the Pasuk in Hosea. Ve'echrali b'chamisha asar kasef. So I was sold to me with 15 silver pieces. So first and foremost, the word kira is a reference to a sale. The grave that I purchased. Now this is Yosef talking to Paro about the burial of Yaakov. And what Yosef is telling Paro is that we need to take our father's remains, bring it up to Eretz Yisrael, and bury him in the grave that he himself purchased. Now, it's interesting, by the way, just in general. What does it mean Yaakov purchased it? It wasn't Yaakov who purchased it. It was Avram who purchased it. So Rashi over here notes that. And Rashi over here, the
many verses from Esau.
So Rashi, So the So Rashi over here quotes the Gemara and Sota. That's perfect. Right. So Rashi over here quotes the Gemara and Sota, and the Gemara and Sota talks about how Yaakov is purchasing Esau's share of the Maras HaMachpelah. So Bechamisha Asar Zutesvav Benisam. Now the 15 is an allusion. The 15 mentioned the pasuk in Hosea is an allusion to the 15th day of Nisan. Shebonigal Yisrael Mimitzrayim. So that's the day in which we were redeemed from Egypt. Kesef Elut Sadikim. The Kesef is a reference to the Sadikim. V'chinu Amar Tzura Kesef Lakach Biadi. Good. So far now we have identified the various items mentioned in the pasuk in Hosea as it relates to the Exodus. Continuing. Chomer Sa'orim V'lesech Sa'orim. A chomer is the volume of 30 kor. Lesech is half that amount, which is 15. So we have the numbers 30 and we have the number 15. Elomim and tzedikim sha'olam is kaim bahem. So these are the 45 tzedikim that the world sustains on 45. Now there is another gemara that talks about that lamed vav tzedikim. There are 36 tzedikim. So yes, there seems to be discrepancies in how many tzedikim we need. But maybe there's no discrepancy in the gemaras. Maybe this gemara is talking about, and the gemara over here is going to be clear in terms of what it's talking about. And it's not necessarily a steer to the Gemara of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. So Mitzkayim Be'emeinayodim, Shoshim Kan V'tesvav Be'eretz Yisrov, Shoshim Be'eretz Yisrov V'tesvav Kan. And the way the Gemara has it now, in terms of the division of the 30 and 15, is that the one of those groups are going to be in Bavel, and one of those groups are going to be in Eretz Yisrov. And right now, a lack of clarity, Bavel's getting the 30, Eretz Yisrov's getting the 15, or flipped. Kishu Amar Ve'echa Shoshim HaKesef V'ashlich Oso Beis Hashem El HaYotzer Havi Omer Shloshim Be'eretz Yisrael. So, but then if you just read on in the Psukim, now over here we're shifting over to Zechariah, so you really have to know your Nach. Okay. And so it says how the 30 were deposited in Beis Hashem, and the, now we have the word Yotzar, it should read Otzar, but in other words, it's being deposited in the Beis HaMikdash, so now we know that the 30 over here is a reference to Eretz Yisrael. V'tesvav kan, and that means that 30 in Eretz Yisrael, 15 are in Bavel. Amar Abayi v'Rabuyi mishtache bebei kedusha t'tusei apasa. Now Abayi says, I can actually identify where they're going to be located, the 30. You go to a small shul, unassigned location, unspecified location. But there's a small shul, and what you're going to find over there are most of the 30 are going to be in that very small shul. V'ayinu d'chsiv v'amar alehem, im tov be'enechem avu schari v'im lav, chalu v'ishkalu schari shloshim kesef. And now the Gemara says, based on that, there's another pasuk in Zechariah, so which you're going to understand. The 30 silver pieces, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Elu Shoshot Tzadikim, Momos HaOlam, this 30 silver pieces is also a reference to the 30 Tzadikim of the Umos HaOlam, meaning we don't have the monopoly on Tzadikim, the Umos HaOlam. Nations of the world also have Tzadikim, they have 30 in total. Shomos HaOlam is Kaimim Aleihem. And because of the schus of these 30 Tzadikim of the Umos HaOlam, so the Umos HaOlam survive and sustain themselves. Ula Amar Elu Shoshim Mitzvah Shekiblu Aleihem Bnei Noach. Ula gives another pshat in the 30 as it relates to the Umos HaOlam, and that is in reference to the 30 mitzvos Bnei Noach. Now at this point in time, you're probably wondering, 30? I thought there were 7. The Gemara Sanhedrin, from about Daf Nun Vav, Nun Zayin, Nun Ches, it's easy to remember. No. Right? Noach. So, Nunvav, Nunzayin, Nunches, so, and Nuntes articulate the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. And so, over here, we have a Gemara tucked away in Chul in the seventh Perek that describes that there are not 7, but there are 30 Mitzvos B'nei Noach. Rashi over here writes, Lo nisparshu umehachahu dekayalef. These 30 Mitzvos, as recorded here in our Gemara, are not explained, they are not enumerated nor articulated. And I don't know where the source of it is. Rashi is very comfortable saying, I don't know. Rashi is really my Rebbe in that regard. I don't know. I don't know where the 30 mitzvahs are. Anyway, there is, as someone pointed out to me, there is on record a Rishon. A Rishon, by the way, who frankly I never heard of before, but I don't have to broadcast all of my ignorance. So a Rishon over here actually goes to the 30 mitzvahs B'nei Noach as conjectured by one of the Rishonim. So, the Emekaimim Elo Shlosha. Now, as far as the number that they actually keep, so they keep 3 of the Mitzvot B'nei Noach, 3 of the 30. So over here, which ones do they actually keep? So now as we turn to Tzadi Beis, I'm in Beis. Number one, in Kosin Ksuvah LeZacharim, so that what they do is as follows. They may be involved in Mishkav Zachar, in homosexual activity, but they're not going to legislate and legalize it, and they're not going to turn it into something which is going to be now totally endorsed by the government. Number two, I know there's a lot of room for commentary here. I know. Trust me, I understand. I get it. Number two, the foresight of the Gemara, by the way, is amazing. It's amazing. But number two, V'achash she'en shoklin basar ha'meis b'makulin. Same basic idea. Look, there's a little bit of cannibalism going on, but it's all done basically as an underworld. It's not regulated. It's not legislated. You're not going to be seeing it sold in the markets. And number three, V'achash she'mechabnas the Torah, then they have some sort of honor towards the Torah. One and two are so interesting, by the way, because basically, what are they saying? You know, they do subscribe to three of the mitzvos. And one and two, it's not so much they're subscribing to the mitzvos. It's just that they don't have the audacity and the chutzpah to flaunt them in public, to regulate it and to legislate it and to give it a full stamp of approval. So even as the Gemara is giving a compliment, it is really a back end compliment, to say the least. We are now on the top of Sadi Beis Amud Beis, and that is the end of the Agadic section for now. Okay? How? That's a fair question. I don't have an answer. Rashi over here doesn't comment. So the Gemara now just concluded a lengthy piece of Agadata that started with Yaakov and the wrestling match that they had with the Malach. And the reason why we started there is because, once again, we're trying to identify which Ked and Usher, the right or both, the right and the left, and the Machlokes between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. And so it gave the Gemara the opportunity to launch into the Agadata, and now it has come to an end, and we're back to the Halacha. V'noheg b'shalil. We noted in the Mishnah that the Gid Hanasha is applicable to the fetus. Amar Shmuel b'chaba mutter, l'divrei HaKol. Now, Shmuel makes the following statement, and that is that the chelev of the, what we seem to think right now, is the developing fetus inside the mother, is going to be permissible according to all opinions. Now, once again, let's remind ourselves. When you shecht a mother and there's a fetus inside, and that fetus, let's talk specifically about a case where the fetus is a full term and it was alive at the time of the shechita. So what is that fetus now? Is it an independent entity of the mother, or is it just still an appendage of the mother, totally connected to the mother? And this is a machlokas that we saw back in the fourth parak between the Chachamim and Rav Meir. The shita of the Chachamim is that the fetus inside of the mother is always considered an appendage of the mother. And when you shecht the mother, the fetus inside is going to be totally mutter. It is considered shechted. And even if that fetus is delivered post-shechita, that fetus, that live animal, is a shechted animal. And this is, of course, the famed Ben Pekua, which we discussed at length in the fourth parak of the Masechta. Good. The shita of Rav Meir is then no. Once the fetus inside has arrived at full term, it is no longer considered a dependent entity. It's an independent entity. If you remember back in the day when we discussed this, we reflected on the question, according to Rav Meir, if I shechted the fetus while inside, is that a good shechita? Good, that was a question the Gemara asked earlier. According to Rav Meir, it's a totally independent entity. Shechting of the mother will not allow for the consumption of the fetus inside, because it's its own separate entity. It requires its own shechita, according to Rav Meir. The statement of Shmuel is really difficult to understand. Shmuel says that the chelev of this fetus inside of the mother is going to be mutter lakol. Everyone will say it's okay. What are you talking about? Everyone's going to say, oh, it's okay? That's the Gemara's question. That was really good. That was really good. And that's how I get ahead in the daf. The Eino no heg ba'of. Thank you for the correction. Thank you. The Eino no heg ba'of. Okay, everyone just remember that introduction I just said. Okay, everyone please remember it. I'm not repeating it. Not repeating it. If you need to, just play, you know, go back on the tape and play a little bit earlier. And yes, I date myself when I talk about a tape. But that's fine. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. What do you mean the oaf doesn't have a yerech? It doesn't have a thigh? Of course it has a thigh. So isle velo agil. The Gemara says, yes, it has a thigh, but it's not anatomically correct. Now, what does that mean, it's not anatomically correct? It is anatomically correct, meaning it is the thigh of the bird. What does it mean? So it means that it's anal agil, it's not rounded. Meaning, once again, what sets the precedent of what defines the Gitanasha vis-a-vis the Isser of Gitanasha? And the answer is the human thigh. Because, again, the entire Isser is generated from Yaakov. So since the human thigh is rounded in nature, so in order for it to be a thigh, to qualify as a Gitanasha vis-a-vis the Isser, it has to be rounded. And since the thigh of a bird is not, so therefore it is a Gitanasha, but it doesn't have the Isser of the Gitanasha. By Rav Yirmi Yisrael Lof Agil Yisrael Lebehem of Aloh Agil Mai Basa Didei Azlina Basa Minei Azlina. The Gemara now asks, what about mutations? Let's say you have a bird with a mutated thigh. It actually is rounded. Now it's not normal, but it has now the quality of the rounded thigh. Is that going to be now have the Isser of the Gitanasha? Or let's ask the question the other direction. Let's say you have a behemoth with a mutation where its thigh is not rounded off. So then are we going to say that it does not have the Isser? Take it. The Gemara leaves this question unresolved. And once again, the Gemara over here, in its classic discussion of Siba versus Siman. In other words, this rounded thigh, is it just correlate to the Isser? Or is the rounded thigh the actual cause of the Isser? Causation versus correlation, Siman versus Siba, a classic question that basically is addressed throughout all the Gemara. And here's a wonderful illustration. V'noig b'shalil. Amishmul v'chalba mutter l'divrei hakol. The chalv is going to be mutter of the fetus according to everybody. V'chalba demai. Ilem d'shalil. Are you talking about the shalil? Well, you can't possibly be talking about the shalil. V'ab miflek pligi bei d'tanya. The Gemara over here goes back to what we learned earlier in the Masechta. Noeg b'shalil v'chalba also divrei rabbi meir. Rabbi Yehuda omer eino noeg b'shalil v'chalba mutter. The chalv of the fetus inside of the mother, it's machlok chin Rav Meir and the Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Meir says it's asar. This is Rav Meir l'shitaso. Well, the Gemara is going to make that point. V'amar Rav Elazar, amar Rabbi Yoshi, machlok is ben tisha chai. V'alach Rav Meir l'shitaso, Rav Yehuda l'shitaso. And to which the Gemara basically says, what just happened over here? Rav Meir, first of all, we're establishing that we're talking about the fetus of a fully formed and the fetus inside is fully formed and developed, meaning it's full term and it's alive. And this question of whether you're allowed to eat the chalav of the fetus inside of the mother, where you shecht the mother, is basically the old machlokas of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, how to view the fetus. According to Rav Meir, with the fetus now inside at full term, is an independent entity. So you know what the fetus is? It's an animal with all the qualities of an animal, where the chalav of that animal is chalav, and the gitanasha of that animal is the gitanasha. And so you're telling me that everyone agrees that the chalav is mutter? Rav Meir would never say that the chalav is mutter. According to Rav Meir, the chalav is asur. Mashenkin, according to Rav Yehuda, that chalav is going to be mutter. Because the way Rav Yehuda views the fetus inside of the mother, it's an appendage to the mother. It does not have its own identity. It's not an animal while inside the mother. It's an appendage to the mother. And so the Gemara says, so I don't understand what was Shmuel talking about. So where we're going to start tomorrow, we'll start at this point tomorrow, and where we're going to start tomorrow is that Shmuel was not talking about the chalav of the fetus, but rather Shmuel was talking about the chalav of the gid, meaning the gid anasha, to be discussed in more detail at the beginning of tomorrow morning, Mirza Shem.